Welcome to the Motley Fool Radio Show. I'm David Gardner, broadcasting from Fool Global Headquarters here in Alexandria, Virginia, here each week to talk about the motley world of money and investing. And we have a special show this week. We're going to feature four interviews with comedians, humorists, you know, people in the funny business. We'll talk to Cheech Marin of Cheech and Chong fame. We'll talk to comedian Jeff Foxworthy. And we'll hear from Gong Show creator Chuck Barris. But we kick things off by talking to a guy who humors you through the written word. Dave Barry is a Pulitzer Prize-winning humor columnist with the Miami Herald. He's the author of 25 books, including his new book, Dave Barry's Money Secrets, like Why Is There a Giant Eyeball on the Dollar? Dave Barry, welcome to the Motley Fool Radio Show.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
Dave, why did you write the book?
Well, you know, there's a lot of books out there. Financial advice and how to manage your money and how to get rich and so on. And I looked at those books and I found that there was one big problem with them, which is that I was getting none of the royalties. And I thought, it's time to do something about that. And so I wrote this book.
By the way, why is there a giant eyeball on the dollar?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. Well, there are several theories. The most prominent is that the engraver was drunk. But I think in the current dollar, it's actually a national security thing. They have a little chip in there behind the eyeball, and it can see you. And it's transmitting images from your dollar back to a computer in Washington, D.C. So mostly what they're picking up is the insides of people's wallets, which isn't all that helpful. But if you do see an act of terrorism, hold your dollar up, eyeball side out, and that will help. Your government will thank you.
Dave Barry, you're very outspoken on the problem of financial illiteracy. You write that, and I quote, "Chances are that when it comes to your personal finances, you are, with all due respect, a complete moron. I do not mean that in a derogatory way. I mean it simply in the sense that when it comes to handling money," you write, "Dave, you are a stupid idiot," end quote. Put that in layman's terms for us.
Okay, I'll give you an example, a specific example. People generally do a very poor job of budgeting, handling their money. Let's say, I'm going to just take an example, a Susie Orman-style example. Let's say that every day on your way to work, you stop at Starbucks and you buy coffee. And let's say you buy a specialty coffee, $4, okay? $4 a day, you think that's nothing. You buy the $4 coffee every single day. Now, let's imagine for a moment that you don't. That instead of that, you save that $4 every day. What would happen? First of all, you'd get fired because you'd fall asleep at work for the lack of caffeine. But on the positive side, you would save $20 a week, which means after 2 weeks, you would have enough money to buy a half keg of beer. Think about it. That's what I'm talking about. That's what the kind of long-term financial planning, sacrifice for the future. That's how you get ahead financially.
And Dave, you've also written that you can't trust anybody when it comes to my money. Let's say, how much of that is a joke and how much of that has been true for Dave Barry?
Well, I'll give you an example in my own personal life about the importance of not trusting people. Mm-hmm. I got an email from a gentleman in Nigeria who wanted to give me $43 million. Now, it wasn't exactly clear how he picked me, but evidently he had the $43 million that he needed to get rid of. And my name came up, okay? So he sent me an email. And my friends told me, this is a scam. He's not going to, why would a guy give you $43 million, okay? But I thought, well, what he wanted from me was $1,000 because of legal. You know how when you give somebody $43 million, you guys are financial experts. You know, if you give somebody $43 million, evidently there are some costs involved.
It's a drop in the bucket.
So to me, like, okay, I'm giving him $1,000, but he's going to give me $43 million. So despite the warnings of my friends, I sent him $1,000. So come a couple days later, I get another email saying there's some kind of legal red tape over there in Nigeria getting the $43 million to me. He needs some more money. He needs another $5,000. My friends are saying, oh, come on. Now you really, I sent him the $5,000. I mean, okay, $1,500. Still $43 million. Sent him the $5,000. 2 days later, I received by UPS $43 million in cash, okay? The cardboard boxes of cash all over my house. I need a snow shovel just to get out of my bedroom because of all the money lying around. And why? Because I didn't trust my friends, and I believed the man in Nigeria. That's what I mean by don't trust people when it comes to your money.
You still needed to write a book.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question? Has anybody ever in history really actually responded to the Nigerian email scam? I mean, they don't seem to be as many of those anymore. Sort of like everybody.
I think someone in history has done it.
has actually
Don't
gone.
Don't you think so?
Well, they sent so many of those emails out. Somebody maybe was responding to it. But I don't know. Seems kind of shaky to me.
And yet very lucrative. But Dave, let's talk stocks. How can our listeners make money in the stock market?
Well, that's a very good question, especially for Motley Fool listeners. And I know there's been a lot of systems touted and a lot of surefire methods and so on. And I have one. It's three steps. And this is the real takeaway content of this particular interview. So
all right,
I suggest that everyone get a pen and a piece of paper because I'm going to give you the three steps. Surefire, can't miss, no way you can lose. Three steps for making money in the stock market. Okay, get ready. Step one, research the stock market for the past 25 years and find out which stocks have outperformed the market over those 25 years. Step two, get a time machine. Step three, go back in time and buy those stocks.
And
if you follow that system, you cannot lose money. You cannot. And I know what you're going to say. There's a flaw in that, Dave. I'm too lazy to do the research. Well, that's your problem, Mr. Motley Fool.
Let's move from Dave Barry, the faux financial author, to Dave Barry, the real guy. What was your experience, the real Dave Barry, what was your experience with money growing up?
We didn't have a lot. My dad was a Presbyterian minister, but he really was basically a social worker in New York City. And, I mean, we weren't poor, but we never, ever, ever had a new car. My dad had the worst judgment in the history of the world about what kind of car to buy, what kind of used car to buy. For example, we're the only people in the United States of America that I know of who ever owned a Hillman Minx, which is a Minx is like a ferret kind of animal. And that's kind of what kind of car this was. The safety feature of the Hillman Minx was it wouldn't start. It was one of the cars. You know, like when there's a movie, a horror movie, and the beautiful actress gets in the car and the bad guy's chasing her and she tries to start the car and the car goes, rrr, rrr. That part was always played by a Hillman Minx. They may dress it up as like a Chevrolet or something, but it was always because the Hollywood movie makers knew that was a car that could be counted on to not ever start. And my dad cut my hair, which was really how I became a humor writer, because my dad had these he bought these clippers at a drugstore, the kind with a little guard on it that cuts your hair down to about the length of the hair on a tennis ball, which was not a good look for me. There's really no good look for me, but that's a really bad look for me, the tennis ball look. And so I had to like be funny in school because I was a little kid with a tennis ball haircut, so that the larger, nice, better looking kids would not hold me upside down over the toilet all the time. But can I tell you my celebrity hair story from this morning when I was on the Today Show?
I'd love to hear.
I was sitting there. I have really bad hair. I'm sort of famous for having like uncontrollable bad hair, and it's naturally that way. And Ann Curry of the Today Show walked by while I was sitting there waiting to be interviewed by Katie Couric, and said, "Your hair is really poofy." And she licked her hand and kind of smeared my hair down.
Very forward.
When I appeared on air, my hair was slicked by Ann Curry's spit. And that was like one of the sexier moments of the day for me.
When did you first realize you could write for a living?
It sort of gradually snuck up on me. I was, believe it or not, I was teaching effective writing seminars to business people. I mean, I had worked for a newspaper. And then I ended up leaving that in the 70s, and I was going around the country. I was a consultant, which is code for a person who doesn't work all the time, teaching these effective writing seminars. But I had a lot of spare time, and I would write columns, humor columns, on the side, and I would send them to various newspapers. And eventually they started printing them, some of them, and then more and more. And then at some point, like I was in my mid-30s, and I didn't really think that I would ever be a writer for a living. I just liked to do it. I realized that I could make a living writing, which was very exciting, and that's what I did. Yeah.
Given that, Dave, how about two quick tips for us business people on how to write more effectively?
Real ones?
Sure.
Okay. Get to the point and get it done with quickly. I discovered when I was teaching effective writing seminars, that people who do some really complicated project and end up with a really impressive result and and could save their company a whole ton of money or whatever, inevitably think that the way to explain that is to start at the very beginning and drag their readers through all the work they did and tell them on page 73 that, you know, and by the way, we can now save $53 million a year if we do what I recommend you. And I'd say, no, tell them that first. They go, I can't. They won't understand. I'd say, yes, they will. Tell them at the first sentence. We can save $53 million. But it's, and people all think that's a great idea for everyone else to do, but everybody in business people think they can't do that themselves. You can, business people. And also never say enclosed, please find the enclosed enclosure. Just write like a human being.
It sounds as if too many of us are forgetting we're actually communicating with others as we write. Is that what it comes down to?
Exactly. I mean, I would tell people, like, when you read other people's reports, do you honestly sit down and go through every word? No, you skim through it, looking desperately for whatever the point was. So if you just put it at the beginning of your own reports, everyone will be very grateful to you.
What
and
a
you
shock.
Also find, yeah, and then you discover you don't have to write so much after it usually.
A signature question we do ask on this show, Dave, and I'd love to ask it of you, is that you consider and you reflect upon your smartest and your dumbest investments in life. It might be an investment of money or time. Who knows? Dave Barry, what has been your smartest investment looking back?
A guitar. When I started making money from writing, I got $600. I wrote an article. I got $600. And I really didn't have that much money then. But what I really, really wanted more than anything in the world was an electric guitar. And I went out and found a really nice Les Paul for $600. I don't know what it's worth now, but it's worth a lot more than that. Mm. But the main thing was I really love that guitar. I played it all. The worst investment I ever made was a Chevrolet Vega.
What year was that?
1971. Okay. You'll never see a Vega driving around because they were made of compressed rust. if you lost your car, you know, like how people, like, they have these things, they press their keys and their car chirps in the parking lot. Vega owners, we didn't need that. We would just stop and listen and we'd hear clang. That would be a piece falling off of our Vega.
Let's hold it there for a minute. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation with Dave Barry, author of Dave Barry's Money Secrets, like Why Is There a Giant Eyeball on the Dollar?
Do the Vega. Take a chance.